temptation, promiscuity, marriage, homosexuality. These are some of the issues addressed in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, Sexual Morality in a Christless World. You can read an excerpt at issuesetc.org or find out more by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Learn the truth about sexual morality from a reasoned, Christian perspective with the Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Sexual Morality in a Christless World.
Let's elect a sane, competent person with international experience, a unifier who is mature enough to reach out for advice.
We all understand what it will mean for our daughters and granddaughters when Hillary Clinton walks into the Oval Office as President of the United States of America. It will change their lives.
For all of us who know that the brightest future for our country is the one that we build together, and for my friend Hillary Clinton, I humbly accept my party's nomination to be Vice President of the United States.
I ask you to do for Hillary Clinton what you did for me. I ask you to carry her the same way you carried me. Because you're who I was talking about 12 years ago when I talked about hope.
Some of the speakers at last night's Democratic National Convention, President Barack Obama introducing Hillary Clinton in advance of tonight, the conclusion where she will receive officially the nomination of her party. We're going to get an update on the Democratic National Convention in the last 20 minutes of Issues Etc. on this Thursday afternoon. Mark Hemingway joins us. He's senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be back.
You recently returned from Philadelphia. In fact, I understand you had a little trouble leaving. You won't be able to be with us yesterday because of a protest of some kind outside the convention center there in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I was running around reporting with a group of left-wing agitators known as Democracy Spring. They're the people that have been climbing over the barricades and causing all kinds of trouble there. So it was kind of an interesting experience to see how these people work.
Let's talk a little bit about last night. Of course, the president headlined. What did the president need to do for Hillary Clinton, and did he accomplish it last night?
This is actually a trickier question than it sounds, because since the beginning of this convention, they've introduced this theme as Hillary is the change maker, because I think there's a general feeling in this country that the things aren't going as well as they should be. I mean, if you look at the polling questions on whether or not the country's on the right track or the wrong track is pretty well an overwhelming majority and has been for a long time. So if you're the president, you're in an unusual position because you want people to see her as a continuity of your legacy, but at the same time, you have to balance this idea that you're going to keep making positive change. I don't think that Obama really necessarily went in on the positive change thing. He sort of doubled down on the, you know, four more years of, you know, Obama and progressive progress. And I think that he gave a very effective speech, and, you know, obviously the media loved it. But it's an interesting speech because I think in a lot of ways the sunny optimism and, you know, the calls to hope and all this stuff were completely at odds with his own presidency, which has been, you know, uniquely and quite deliberately divisive to achieve certain political goals. So it was a good speech, and I'm sure everybody watching it felt inspired for the time being. The question is it so at odds with the reality of Obama's presidency that there's going to be some cognitive dissonance there? And, you know, in a week or two, are people going to still feel that great about it? Will it be that lasting? I'm not so sure.
Well, as you hinted at just a moment ago, there was apparently no cognitive dissonance for the media's response. Generally, the media's response was almost a, you know, this is our last chance to say what we really think about President Barack Obama. And boy, did they.
Yeah. No, I mean, I saw a little bit of it afterward because I was just getting off a train. I stood there watching television, and I was just sort of stunned. I mean, the absolute gushing was just universal and completely over the top. Having said that, I mean, I personally think that Obama's speech-giving ability, while certainly is, above average, has often been overrated. And, I'm willing to concede that this was even one of his best speeches, having gone back and reviewed it. But at the same time, again, the rhetoric is so at odds with his presidency, and I think people have been feeling that way for a long time. I mean, all that hope and change stuff, the guy that ran on executive accountability because George Bush was broadening his powers, coming into office and doing all these things like, reinterpreting Title IX to go after North Carolina's bathroom law, on an administrative basis to, droning American citizens and all of these other national security measures that he accused Bush of doing. It's just very hard to reconcile that sort of optimism and this hope and all this stuff that he's calling to all of his unilateral action because he didn't want to build consensus for his own agenda.
Sounds like you're also saying that he ran the risk last night, in essence, of kind of running against himself a little bit, because if he emphasizes the need for further change too much, he highlights the fact that some of the changes that he promised did not come about.
Yeah. No, I think that's very real. But at the same time, we have a situation here where Donald Trump's speech last week was very sort of, a lot of people criticize it as dark, and I think that that's somewhat of a fair criticism. But at the same time, Bernie Sanders' speech Monday night also was like a really dark speech about how bad things are in America and how we need to fix these things. And, if that's the prevailing feeling on the hard left and the hard right, that things are bad and they need to be fixed, Obama's the guy stuck in the middle responsible for all of this, and he's got to somehow reach into this and salvage a legacy that Hillary Clinton can ride the coattails of. Again, like I said, as an actual political moment, just listening to the words sounded like a lot of the stuff that you want to hear from a politician. I heard a lot of people call it Reagan-esque, and I think if you're just focusing strictly on the language, that's not entirely inaccurate. But again, it's just discordant, given the fact that we're 8 years into his presidency, and a lot of people have already formed pretty strong impressions about Obama failing to live up to the sort of hope and change promise of 2008.
Another risk that is being taken here, and we'll see tonight how it turns out, is that Hillary Clinton has to follow Bernie Sanders, her husband, who gave one of his famous stem winders.
Yeah.
And probably, next only to her husband is Barack Obama. She has to hit it out of the park, or it's going to be kind of a letdown, isn't it?
I think that's exactly right. Hillary Clinton is terrible at the sort of retail politics stuff. She just something about her, a lot of people have said that people criticize this as sexist or whatever. Like, I'm not going to go there, but there's just something about her that is very just sort of shrill and just very off-putting to people. She's not very good at, appearing warm or genuine or any of those things. I mean, her laugh in particular drives people up the wall. And so she's got to go out there and deliver this capstone speech, as you point out. And in the era we live in, 24-hour news cycles, everything, moves quickly. So if the last thing that, that's left in people's mouths from the Democratic convention is, Hillary Clinton delivering a really long speech and not doing a particularly great job of delivering it, even if it's a well-written speech, I mean, I think it could well really put a damper on some real highlights like Obama's speech and Michelle Obama's speech and it was a handful of other interesting things that came out of the convention.
What did you make of former New York City Republican Mayor Michael Bloomberg's speech?
I confess that I didn't really see it, but I do think it is interesting that, Bloomberg is playing both sides of the aisle here. And it's also interesting that there's no real sort of center left in American politics. There's really just, left or right, and there's no real place for Bloomberg at a Republican convention at all. I mean, like, I'm not even sure they would really even have him anymore. So I just think that the fact that he's only able to get purchase on the Democratic side of things, just really speaks to sort of the divide in this country. And further, what's interesting about the Bloomberg issue to me is that it represents how much the conservative liberal divide is an urban sort of rural or ex-urban divide, and that is going to be a really interesting thing going forward, because cities are just getting bigger and bigger, and rural areas are getting decimated. So you know, it's going to be impossible to be a mayor of any big city like Bloomberg and remain a Republican.
With about 30 seconds here, the pullaway line from Bloomberg's speech was probably, "I know a con man when I see one." He's referring to Donald Trump. But isn't there a risk there as well? Because it's not like Hillary Clinton is pure as the driven snow when it comes to legal and or other problems.
Right. Yeah, I've seen a lot of people go in, all in on this, and I just think that people are acting like Hillary Clinton is some sort of known, trusted quantity, and like we've known her for a long time, and I don't think people have ever really felt good about Hillary Clinton. I mean, both of them have abysmal numbers in terms of, you know, things like trustworthiness, and in terms of likability. And so I really think that portraying one guy as unacceptable and Hillary Clinton as being, you know, the sane alternative, you know, might well backfire on them. I think they're assuming they have a level of support that they don't.
We're getting an update on the Democratic National Convention. Mark Hemingway is our guest. He's senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Talk a little bit more about what tonight may hold in the Democratic National Convention, what expectations must be met when we come back.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/lutheracademy.
There's a new neighbor in town. The Lutheran Federal Credit Union is open and ready to serve members of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Lutheran Federal Credit Union provides checking and savings accounts, home, car, and personal loans, on-demand mobile banking, 30,000 ATMs, and 5,000 in the co-op shared network. You'll find the modernized banking experience you need with excellent customer service and security you expect at lutheranfcu.org. LutheranFCU.org.
I'm Pastor Todd Rappe. I serve a congregation here in Fayetteville, North Carolina, Our Redeemer Lutheran Church, a sister congregation of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. All of the saints here gather around blood, water, and spirit as theologians of the cross every Sunday morning at 10:30. We only welcome sinners. We certainly would welcome you. If you'd like to contact us through our website, you may do so at FAYLCMS.org.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Not only does our church need men right now, but the world needs men who will proclaim the gospel in its purity.
Issues, Etc. regular guest, Dr. Peter Scare, Associate Professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
If when you go to sleep at night, you're thinking about it, my experience with it is this, is that thought won't go away. So if you're going to bed at night thinking about following our Lord and becoming a preacher of this gospel, then I would love if you could come and visit Fort Wayne, our campus. We'd love to show you around and show you what it is that we do.
Have you ever considered becoming a pastor? Contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana at 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or visit ctsfw.edu. Christ-centered, cross-focused, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're getting an update on the Democratic National Convention. Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard is our guest. Before we go on tonight's expectations, I did have one more question on President Obama's speech last night. He made the statement that I think is going to go down in history, where he talked about the Republican National Convention, and he said it was, quote, "it wasn't particularly Republican, and it sure wasn't conservative," end quote. What was he saying there, and Is he right?
You know, I think he was hitting at this issue within the Republican Party itself, which is this issue that a lot of people who are Republican are uncomfortable with Trump because he's not a lifelong Republican. He doesn't appear to have a lot of familiarity with, let alone espouse, you know, specific conservative principles that have dominated the party's thinking for decades. And he, you know, wants people to think very hard about whether or not they can support that. And further, it's representative of, I think, a smart strategy as part of the Democrats, which is to say that because Hillary Clinton was running against a socialist in the primary, and she finally vanquished him, she was pulled very far to the left on a lot of policy issues, and now she's in the general, and the general has won by getting independents and people who are, you know, maybe not necessarily hardcore partisan supporters out to the ballot box. So she and Obama, by extension, want to appeal as, you know, sort of mainstream people who, you know, aren't particularly liberal, and they want to, you know, expressly even make the pitch to Republicans. I think that's what drove Hillary Clinton to pick Tim Kaine, who's known as being one of the more moderate Democrats in the Senate, and they really want to present themselves as, you know, credible in that way. A lot of people made the remark that a lot of things Obama said in terms of his critique of Donald Trump were things that could have been, you know, said by Ted Cruz when he was, you know, criticizing the party at his speech at the convention last week. So, you know, it's an explicit pitch, and it's a really interesting and even clever in its way, but, you know, Obama is so liberal and so relentlessly, you know, anti-conservative. I mean, this was the party that went out to, you know, make Mitt Romney, you know, the zenith of responsible Republican, you know, candidates, out to be, you know, this untrustworthy monster. So I don't know how much, you know, resonance is going to have coming from him.
Hillary Clinton not only has to convince people that she's sane, which is not difficult when she's comparing herself with Donald Trump lately.
Right.
But she has to convince people who say, I can't vote for Trump, to vote for her, doesn't she? She's not just going after the middle. She's going after those people who can't vote for Trump, isn't she?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. You know, like I said, she's definitely pivoting toward the general election, where, you know, she's no longer speaking to the hardcore Democratic voters, and she's got her own problems with the angry Bernie voters and other things like that. But she's smart enough to realize that, you know, she has to moderate things. She can't be talking about, you know, all left-wing issues all the time. She's got to be speaking to middle America, you know, people that can actually be persuaded to vote Democratic that may not otherwise be inclined to. And, you know, I think one of the interesting things about this is that Hillary was pushed so far left in the primary, whereas Donald Trump has always sort of just been Donald Trump, meaning he's never a guy that's particularly conservative, and he hasn't really done a whole lot to, you know, go out of his way to present himself as conservative. So he already sort of has this natural appeal to a lot of, you know, swing voters and, you know, blue-collar Democrats and other things like that that maybe wouldn't be voting Republican. Hillary Clinton's got to sort of create an image for herself now that she's not a hardcore partisan, and that, you know, independents and, you know, Republicans who are maybe leery of Trump can vote for her. But she's got to, like, do that kind of out of whole cloth in a way that Trump, I don't think, does.
What becomes of the hardcore Bernie contingent? Do they fade away? What happens to them? About a minute.
You know, so I spent about a whole day with these people yesterday, and I think a lot of them are going to vote third party, you know, Jill Stein, Gary Johnson even. Having said that, though, I don't know how sizable a percentage of Democratic voters they are, whether it's enough to make a difference. But if you look historically, the last few elections, they've been so close that, you know, even if it adds up to a percentage or so, it could well mean the difference for Hillary Clinton. You know, that's assuming Donald Trump can stay close the way that other Republican candidates have stayed competitive in the last few elections.
Just a few seconds. Donald Trump got his bump. Will Hillary get hers from her convention?
I think so. I think that it'll probably go back. Nothing dramatic, so dramatic has happened at other convention that it won't go back to basically the status quo beforehand, where Hillary Clinton had a slight edge above Trump. But, you know, who knows? It's hard to predict anything in this election.
Mark Hemingway, senior writer for the Weekly Standard. You can follow him on Twitter at Heminator, HEMINATOR. Mark, thanks very much for being our guest.
Thanks again, guys.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to continue our series on the Lutheran Confessions. Pastor Paul McCain of Concordia Publishing House is going to join us. We're going to talk about the Lord's Prayer, the petition, "Give us this day our daily bread." This is one of those things that Luther, when he starts into it in the Large Catechism, he has a lot to say. And it's very good basic teaching. And It is all rooted in the comfort of the gospel, that prayer and God's provision for us in daily bread. That'll be tomorrow on Issues Etc. with Pastor Paul McCain. And it's This Week in Pop American Christianity with Pastor Chris Roseborough. Issues Etc. has been brought to you in part today by the Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Check out their great rates on car, home, and personal loans at lutheranfcu.org, lutheranfcu.org. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House. Listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House. cph.org.
Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois is happy to support the Christ-centered, cross-focused ministry of Issues Etc. Join us for worship, Bible classes, youth ministry, and other opportunities to grow in Christ. We have a Christian day school for children in preschool to eighth grade. We are located at 1300 Beltline Road. Call us at 618-344-3151 or visit www.goodshepherdcollinsville.org.